While you're coming in, let me urge you. There's a lady here from Canada, and she helped me understand some of the things that I was trying to say. She's from Canada. 40% of the people of Canada live in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. Okay? That's that right side we saw, and then Vancouver. But here's something that I did not know. We're talking about rural. A lot of Canada, we're talking more about small town. 90% of people live in places with more than 10,000. So they populated certain areas. So 90% live in more than 10,000. So that means my statistic of 20,000 left to live in rural areas is not right. So I have to go back and rethink this and relook at this. I may have to say small town. Okay? But let me say this to you in light of that. A lot of Canada has to be reached in a small town mentality. Okay? Would that be fair? Okay? So what we're saying about small town in the next couple hours, pay attention to that. And there is one denomination that is in there, the Fellowship of Evangelical Baptists, that's doing some church planting. I spent most of my time way out in Alberta and over in the Maritimes, and the Maritimes are hurting. They have actual towns with no evangelical witness whatsoever. But God is doing a really neat thing there at this time. You know what the Maritimes are? That's PEI, Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia. We just have, we're starting the first Southern Baptist Church in Newfoundland this summer. So there's a lot of neat things happening. Okay, let's come back. I think we have almost everybody. You guys ready? We on? Here we go. Okay, I'm just going to give you some statistics now to help you understand lostness. 8 churches a day close in the United States each day. You look across the United States, 8 will close their doors. That means that if they had a building, it would be locked up. If they had just meeting in a storefront or something, in an urban center, it would just be closed down. Even if it was a house church would just fold. Okay, 8 churches a day that we have reported. In other words, they've been reported on that 1,600 a year that we know about. These 8 are all different denominations. The 6 churches that are started each day, 4.5 of them are Southern Baptist. So of the 6 churches that start in America, we start 4.5 of them. So you guys are going to be part of some of that statistics. But 8 churches of all denominations close. There are churches of many denominations which close each day all across. Now follow this. 8 churches close, 6 churches start. We have a net loss of 2 churches a day. Can we possibly be making an impact on lostness? No. God called us to begin churches. One of the reasons that we have difficulty is our definition of church is a building or a place with a building, with a steeple, and people. All right? We need to examine house churches, very biblical. We need to examine churches that are just a step up from a Bible study that become a church. We need to look at people who are not trained in seminary that can be pastors, shepherding people out there who are maybe a farmer or a rancher or something like that. You'll see in this book, 1880, we can prove that from 1880 on, Southern Baptists started thinking educationally as far as pastors as opposed to the farmer rancher pastor that won the West. In 1880, there's a place in Texas, my man from Texas. They had a guy who wanted to be a pastor, and he came to the association, and he said, I feel led of the Lord, and I feel like that I need to be a pastor. Back then, it was like real strict kind of things. And in their minutes in this Texas association, it says, this man can hardly keep his farm and even go to church on Sunday. How could he possibly pastor? They turned him down because they wanted him to go full-time professionally to a seminary. Well, brethren, from 1880 till now, we have bought into that model. Hook, line, and sinker. And I know that I'm speaking at a seminary. I know that I've been invited to a seminary. But the reality of it is, if we keep that model, we have to go back and question the model that changed the world. The Acts model had nothing to do with that. Paul was educated, okay? Not against education. Not against a seminary. My goodness, I'm a product of that. But if we're going to make an impact on lostness, we have to have 2 streams going there. And what I think is going to happen, the seminary-trained person is going to begin to see themselves I know we get in trouble if we use the word apostolic, so I'm not going to use that. So I'm going to use the word missionary. JD. So the person who has the advantage of going to seminary, hearing all of this stuff, needs to begin to see themselves as missionary, not going out to start one church in one place, but to go to one place, maybe the major place in that area, and take what they know and start reaching out like a spider web or a starfish and begin finding indigenous people so every one of these little towns and people groups are able to have a gospel witness. That is the way to win America, and we'll talk about that a little later. Okay, so given our model, this is what's happened. Many denominations close. Each closing leaves a people who are sensitive to God without a leader. Unless everybody who's a Christian just died off. And it has happened in some places. Okay? Who will rescue the perishing? Got a couple of things here just to lighten it up. Two little kids in the sand. It's a big wave coming over. That's what we are in America right now. We just don't know it. We're like the kids playing. Oh, we like to play this church. This church is nice. It gives me an income. It gives me a profession. It gives me a status in the world. It makes me feel good. It makes my family feel good. I fit within our culture. But the reality of it is not helping the vast lostness in America. We are getting turned upside down. The lost. Day after day, the lost just keep getting run over. Forgotten. Population of the United States as of 9:30 a.m. Friday, March 9th. I couldn't do it yesterday, but I had my secretary do it March 9th. Canadian population as of March 9th. Population of North America, add them up together. Now, this, when I say North America, this is by North American Mission Board standards. We do not cover Mexico, which is actually considered part of North America. So this is the U.S. and Canada more appropriately. What percentage are lost? The statistical guys, I gave it away before, will tell you that 50% are lost. That's as of March 9th. I think it's much greater than that, and most people that I know think that. Southern Baptists reported 371,850 baptisms in 2005. Many people were high-fiving, saying, look, we did 350,000 baptisms. But the reality of that is that we have done between 350 and 450 for the last 50 years, maybe 40 years, since the 60s. We had a high, actually, in the 50s where they had some big emphasis on Sunday school. 371. Now, that seems like a lot, right? Now, to us, you give me $371,000, I'll think I have a lot of money. All right? That's how we think about these numbers. But watch this. That's a chart, actually. See where that 371, that sliver? That's what that represents into the most conservative estimate of lostness. Come on, baby. If 50% are lost, Southern Baptist baptisms represent 0.22%. Statisticians would probably say that 0.22 is considered an insignificant statistic. That means it's not worth writing about, an insignificant statistic. We have not even come to a 1%. Now, brethren, I say this to you because when my generation came up, We were saying these things, and we have to start churches. So we got hot on starting churches, and we're starting these 1,600 a year. But there's another level that God is leading you young people. You are wired different. You have a different thinking process. It's a wonderful thing if we are able to release you. Okay? Some of us old dudes, we just need to be able to release them. We need to grasp it and release it. All right? Let's keep going here. In the United States, and you're not that old, but you know what I mean. This is just for your benefit. One birth every 8 seconds, one death every 13 seconds, one international immigrant becomes a citizen, 31 seconds. Oops, net gain It was like 3,000, 3 million. I think it'll come up here again. 300, oh, this is a different one. 303 people die every year, every hour. 72 die every day, 7,200. 2.5 million die every year. If all this happens, by the time you come back here on Monday, 20,500 people will die and be lost for eternity. That's how many rural towns divided by 2,500. That's how many rural towns of people are wiped out every weekend and lost. Guys, we've got to get a hold of the lostness of North America. Our culture says that we're doing all right. Our politics like to tell us that we're doing all right. But the reality of it is, if we're not reaching the places where we are putting emphasis, what is happening in the rural areas? We need to have guys who can overcome what I'm going to tell you next. Well, I thought it was the next slide, but we'll get there. Rural America represents 1/6. We saw that. 2/3 of Canada, we see a different...
About 1/10.
1/10 is rural, okay? But this 2/3, 40%, 60% live in small towns.
Well, 40% of people live in just three cities, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. And 90% of the people live in a place of 10,000 or more. So you have 10% who live in a place of 10,000 or
smaller. Okay. I have to go back and check all this. This is like a new thing that we're learning right now. So check Canada yourself. Okay? No, really. It's kind of embarrassing, but we got a lady here who's telling me it's totally different than what my research has shown. So I don't want to give you wrong things. So I'm saying right here on tape, make sure you check Canada. Okay, we talked about those two, where they're coming from. All right. Here's the questions we have to answer. And you have to start answering this. How many people do you know that are willing to invest their lives in a small community where there's no recognition? Most of you have not come to seminary with that in mind. How many would graduate from seminary after all this time and all this effort and give their lives to a few people who may never hear the gospel from a person? Well, they may get it on the internet. They may get it through the radio waves. I'm talking about a real live person. Our culture is teaching us something very different. Let's look at the reasons very few will ever consider rural ministry. Look at the wheels that deny the consideration. We're going to bust a few of these myths. Hopefully we'll have a little fun with it. Who says that bigger is better and biggest is best? Who do you think says that? Who? No, yeah. Basically, we do. You go to McDonald's. Did you ever supersize? Huh? Now, I have to admit, I've never supersized. I look this big by just eating the regular stuff. I don't know what supersizing would ever do. All right? But we're looking at everything big. The average home in America is like three times as big as the average home anywhere else in the world, except maybe a few real wealthy places. Bigger is better. We thrive on bigger, more. And it's a part of our culture that I don't know how we can ever break it down. But if you think of bigger, the more stuff you have, the more stuff that breaks. The more stuff they have, the more stuff to fix. The more stuff you have, the more you have to worry about. And we bought into this whole thing. They should give young people like you bigger homes because you have all those young kids around. People without kids should have the little apartments. We've got this all backwards. And we like it that way. Do you know why we like it that way? Because we can afford it that way. You see, we are a basic income-minded thing, and we like bigger things. The only thing we don't like bigger, because of the media, is bigger people. We think fat is not where it's at. Right? You guys who are a little chunky, you know what I'm talking about. All right? The myth, to be significant, be big. The big people are promoting all this, guys. The pretty people are promoting the little magazines that our little girls are reading. We got some issues here. Or as we often see it,
With a large church, I'll feel successful. If the church is small, I might feel like I'm failing. So I didn't come to seminary to take a chance on failing. So I have guys talking to me for the last 15 years. They're saying, I'm doing this demographic study, and this is the fastest growing place, and I want to put myself in the fastest growing place because I want to succeed. And all of this thinking, it's all about God. And then they say, by the way, can you come up with a $45,000, $50,000 income to start it? You see, failing has become not an option. Small is becoming not an option. But for you to consider rural work, it needs to become the option. You need to be able to say, God has equipped me financially, or God has equipped me as a person to be the toughest place. Now, I have to tell you that I do this for where I'm at right now. But if my wife and I, we have a handicapped son, he's blind and retarded, he's 33 years old. And if he were not in our home, we would be in the toughest place in the world doing ministry. Because that's our makeup. We grew up from dysfunctional homes. We know what it's like to not have. We know what it's like to live on the edge. See, I believe if you're not on the edge, you're taking up too much space. I do believe that. What I'm doing, where I'm at now, only God has a clue. So I'm going around doing what He's asked me to do about this rural ministry. And maybe it's just because I can talk with veracity about it. I can talk with passion about it. All right? If you're looking for that comfort, guys, you've come to the right place. You get education, you go out there. But that does not mean that it's significant. The big place myth. I must be in a big place to be significant. Here's the truth. No matter where I go, if I choose rural ministry, I'll still have to eventually say to people that I have 30 people in a town of 1,000 somewhere out in the boondocks. You're still going to have to say to somebody, oh, I pastor 30 people. Now, if you've ever been to meetings, you'll know that people who pastor 30 people, they don't say much. They're not the ones who are going to raise their hand and say, oh, let me tell you what's happening. Because we've developed a culture where we want to hear about big. Let me tell you something. The Bible says that when one person is saved, the angels in heaven shout for glory. Boy, let's recapture some of that. Let's recapture it if we're thinking about rural. Now, don't get me preaching here. I'm trying to behave. All right. Here's a recognition one. I like this one. To be significant, a ministry must be recognized. I must be recognized for my service in a big way. Now, when I was in seminary, I used to think, man, if I were only that person who came in as a guest speaker and I talked to them about what I knew. Let me tell you something. I'm here now and I'm humbled at the fact that it could happen. I'm humbled at the fact that when I'm talking to you, I'm talking about 50 or 60 people who could make a difference if they caught what was being taught. I'm humbled at the fact that you guys hold in your hands a different mindset than my generation. And boy, we need to turn you loose. And I'm afraid we're giving you the same stuff. And there needs to be a release. Somehow, it's got to happen. If you want to be recognized, guys, you're in the right place. You're on the right way. Or as we often see it, when was the last time you saw somebody from a small church speak at a great gathering of the saints? Go to your state conventions and see who speaks. Go to the Southern Baptist Convention and see who speaks. Go to your associations and see who speaks. Go see who's on the boards and things. Bigger is better. We're teaching that. But I'm not sure that's how God views it. The career myth. Sign of significance if I advance. I hear there's a professional ladder. You guys hear about it. You need to climb. I'll climb one ring at a time for the sake of my family. Folks, I'll tell you what. The sake of your family needs to be where the will of God is for that family. When I started my first church, I drove 500 miles one way from seminary in North Carolina to Pennsylvania. Every Friday, I'd get on a van and drive 500 miles, rain, snow, sleet, or shine. My family moved up to that little town, and my wife was there living on $500 a month, an old beat-up Chevette. And the Chevette was so bad that she called me in seminary one time and said, "Steve, the car broke down." I said, "Take it to the little garage in the little town." She took it to the little garage, and the guy said, "Are you that orange Chevette that's riding around town?" And she said, "Well, yeah." He said, "Lady, just junk that thing. There's nothing I can do with it." And I was in seminary. She's crying on the phone. We did that for a year, 500 miles one way, 500 miles next, just to start a church in an area that had no church. Guys, it's still in some of you. And I'm just trying to awaken it. Easy is not always significant. Your family, my kids, both, one's in the ministry now, starting a church in Pennsylvania. My daughter has married a guy who deals with music and stuff like that, and they're serving in their local church. My kids, they may not have had everything growing up. In fact, I can tell you stories that make you cry here today. You don't want to do that. But the reality of it is, when they got through all of their young adult issues, which some of you are going through, about your parents and all of that, they said the one thing you did was you followed God no matter what. So you see, if you're trying to protect your family by money, you may not be protecting them. They need to know that you're going to follow God no matter what. That will make the impression for them to follow God. And gentlemen, a man is not considered a man of God scripturally until his third generation follows his God. So it's not about your kids. It's about your grandkids. I call my son almost every week. I say, "How are those grandkids doing? You spending time with them? You teaching them the word?" "Rah, rah, 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 rah." He said, "I know why you're asking, because you know that you're not a man of God unless my kids follow." And I said, "Well, you better pay attention to that, because I'm going to meet God before you probably." But you see, if you have that in your family tradition, if you know the word, you pay attention to it. You see, it's not about how much you die with. It's what you brought to the end of your life. We need to discuss this a while. You understand it? You guys have choices. You guys have more choices than anybody's ever lived on the face of the earth here in America. You got to decide what you're going to do with your choices. You got to get on your knees before God and figure out. That's why guys like JD are smart. Bring people like us in to give you options, to make you have something to pray about and pray for. The cure for the inferiority myth. If I can succeed professionally, I'll no longer feel inferior. If I were to put a little booth out there like the Catholics do, and I'd like turn my collar around, and I went there during the break, and every one of you came in, and you were real honest, some of you saying, "Did I feel this way? I don't know what I'm going to do, but I feel like I'm losing. I don't know where I'm going. I just don't know." And it could be young, old. Age is not an issue here. We often see it. I've got ahead of myself, but I'll show all those. I think I decided I'd do this. I'll show all those who said that I would amount to nothing that I'm a winner by having a large church. Now, you'll never admit that to anybody, but you can admit it to yourself. And once you start admitting some of these things, you become open to what God wants to do with you and through you. The world is now an open place. It's an open book. You see, some of you, this could be your parents. Many pastors come from dysfunctional homes. You see, remember I told you I came from a dysfunctional home. You see, I had to deal with early on, am I doing this to please my Heavenly Father, or am I this to put my own father in place? Now, my own father, he's still lost, very proud of who I become. But I need to do this for my Heavenly Father. And you'll see in a minute that he didn't send everybody to the right place. Truth. Why build in a rural area? The quality principle. We'll kind of go through this. You guys know most of this. God judges my ministry not by its size, but by its quality. Acts. We'll see both of these scriptures in a minute. Growth is attributed to God. This is the Acts 2, praising God and enjoying favor of all people. And the Lord added to their number those who are being saved. If you look after Pentecost, you'll see from 42 to 47, you will find that it talks about the church who followed the apostles' doctrine and fellowship and prayer. And it said God added to them those who are being saved. We're going to find that we may have a mistaken idea of what the church is. Corinthians, Paul says, "I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow." The older, longer you get in ministry, the more you will understand as you look back that you were there, but God made it all happen. No matter where you are, whether it's big or little, your family, you will understand that you were there, but God made it all happen. He accepted your failure. He accepted your inadequacies. He accepted your depressions. He accepted your not being who you should have been. And He made it happen if you're walking with Him. On the other hand, if you're not, you'll see a whole wave of destruction. You may have a very successful. When I was in Broward County, in a two-year period, six pastors of major churches failed morally. They had it all from man, but there's something missing. You see, bigger is not going to do it. It's not going to give you significance. God is going to make grow what He wants grown. You have to count on that. Take it to the bank, if you will. This is the Bema Seat. His work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed by fire. Speaking of the Holy Spirit, the fire will test the quality of each man's work. You see, the quality of our work is to be tested by God. It's not by man. But you see, most of our lives, we live it for the pleasure of man. We want our buddies to think we're somebody from Seminary. We want our parents. We want our friends. We want our wife. We want our children. We don't want to think about our kids growing up in some rural podunk somewhere and, say, well, my dad pastors a church of four people. And he's not really a pastor. He works at a cattle ranch. Well, buddy, what if we found the people who worked at a cattle ranch and the kids are proud of that man working on a cattle ranch, and you were used to help him to see that he was there to shepherd the people on the cattle ranch. Suddenly, dad's a cattle rancher. And by the way, he's called to be a pastor. See, we've got everything kind of flip-flopped in many ways. But I won't spend much time there. Look at Jesus' example. He attracted multitudes for many reasons. If you read the scriptures there, you'll find that they wanted the bread. They wanted the miracles. They wanted it. But the multitudes left when Jesus preached the hard things. Do you remember He preached the hard things? We don't have time to look that up. But in that process, He said the disciples left. That's what it says. And then He went and He asked Peter, He said, are you going to leave also? And Peter looked at him and said, where else do we go? Brethren, that's the type of person that's going to make it happen. Not the person who sees his significance in 5,000 or 2,000, but sees their significance in God alone. Where else can I go but in your presence and where you send me? Peter learned that. He started learning it there. He really learned it around the Sea of Tiberias, if you remember the stories. And he was the one who preached Pentecost eventually. There were thousands, and those are the ones who, I think, helped the Apostle Paul. At his death, there were maybe 12. I don't know why I put that maybe in there. There were 12. One traitor and 500 others, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 2 through 5. Other passages say he was there with the 120. So I just took the larger thing. When Jesus died, there wasn't a lot of fruit for his labor. You see, if Jesus wanted to teach us something about big, He would have ended up in 3 years having a church of thousands in Jerusalem. That didn't happen until His boys came along. When His boys came along, they had it for a little while, but in Acts chapter 8, He dispersed them to all the world through persecution. God's interested. We're going to see a passage in a minute that's really going to hit this. God calls us to servanthood, humility, faithfulness, right motives. That's that Corinthians 3 passage. And leaving the results to Him. What if your whole life you just spent in a small town and the only person you led was somebody like Paul or Billy Graham? You know, Billy Graham was saved in a rural church in Florida. North Florida, not over in the panhandle. Now what happens if insignificant night, insignificant church, and look at this, what happened. I don't care about your politics with Billy Graham. He's been used by God in a mighty way. Man's thinking, growth is numbers. Failure is low numbers. Let's take a healthy look for a minute. Let's think of other ways of looking. I'll go real brief with this because this is not necessarily why you're here, but I think you need to see it. Oops, how do I go back? Sorry about that, Michael. I went too fast. Okay. Quality over quantity. Thank you. Our members growing spiritually. Our members working in unity using their spiritual gifts. Guys, you know, if we went back to basic smallness. See, I'm from the theory that for you to be healthy, you need to start other things. Have children, have babies. And so church planning comes from healthy things. Doesn't mean how big the thing is. The first church I started was started by a church of 30 people. But they had a vision for this other town. And they said, we'll do whatever it takes to have some way to reach this other town. And I was just a part of that process on the back end. Somebody cared about the town, and I got involved. You see, we need people who care, who are able to say, are our members using what they have, not just in our town, but in the area? I'll save the best for last. I'll wait. Principle one, other things to measure. Survey the church to see if people are satisfied with current usage. Now, I say this because, remember, some of you are going to go into churches in rural areas that are almost dead. Some of you are going to go in places that are going to come alive, in urban, R-U-R-B-A-N areas. That means that the suburbs came from urban, suburban, outside of the urban. Now we have the suburbs giving birth to reaching out to the rural. We call it urban. And some of you will be pastors of churches that are either dead or going to be dead, but if the population is coming out there, what are you going to do with those churches? At first, when you get there, don't measure it by the growth. Help the people see. Measure evangelism by the number of times they shared their faith, not the number of people saved. We already saw that's God's thing. Has everybody in your town heard a gospel presentation? The first thing I did in every town that I've ever pastored is to make some kind of schedule before God, a strategy that every person in that town would hear the gospel in some form, whether using mission groups or myself or some way. I was not doing my job if in a certain period of time everybody has not had a chance to accept the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're going to see that that's actually easier to do in small towns. Here's the thing, measure missions not by giving, but by the number of people who have prayed for missions or encouraged missions or gone to another town to share the gospel. How do you develop indigenous leaders? You encourage somebody to leave your church and go somewhere else. When I was pastoring in Florida, we would give people away on Sunday morning during Sunday school to go to that church who was starting to do rehabilitation, to go during Sunday school hour and start a Bible study in a laundromat, to go where the people are during that time. How many times can we ask our people in larger churches to sit in Sunday school as adults and learn about Noah or David and Goliath and how the rock hit him between the eyes? It's not going to change. We need to have those people released to areas and the people who have never heard. God has a wonderful resource in His people. Number four, test spirituality by real life situations. This is kind of funny. I had a new church that I started, and I wanted to see where the people were. So I was doing the Lord's Supper, and I had one of my friends who was from another town, another area. I had him come dressed like a bum off the street. And I had him just really ragged. And he came in at the very end. We were about to serve the Lord's Supper. And I came in, and as he walked in, I said, oh, brother, I was, you know, standing in the front. And I said, can we help you? And he said something like, yeah, I'm kind of lost. I don't know where to go. You know, I'm kind of looking for a church. And I said, well, you're in a church. You're here. I said, from the pulpit, I said, do you know Jesus as your Savior? Oh, yes, yes, this bum said. Yes, I know Him. I was saved at something. And I said, well, we're about to have the Lord's Supper. Why don't you come down and help us serve? Try that in Tennessee or Ohio or whatever. Why? Why was I able to do that? Because my people, they were trained in being spiritual and caring, and all believers have dignity. All people have dignity. It wasn't about how many people came. So they let him serve, and the beautiful thing is most of the people there, they thought that he was just a bum, and I let him do it. But I had set him up to see how they'd react. They passed the test. Try it. See where the church you're pastoring, they passed the test of the dignity of all humanity. If you can't pass the test of dignity of all humanity, you will not win the lost. You will not have a significant impact in lostness. Principle two. Wherever God calls you to minister is an important place. Jesus came to Bethlehem, not Jerusalem. Then he lived in Nazareth. Can anything good come out of Nazareth, they said? What kind of church growth strategy is this? The guys in the last 10 years, their church growth strategy was, find me the fastest growing something and I'll go there. It may work, but it's not the only way to go about business. John Bunyan wrote Pilgrim's Progress while in prison. Paul, by the way, was stuck in prison the last few years of his life. Real significant there, huh? Wow, he made the most of it. What did he do? He said he preached to Caesar's household. God only knows where that went around the world. Jim Elliot, you know the story of him. He was killed, his first missionary journey. And look at now. There's books written about him. His wife's going, talking. His kids, the guy who killed him has become saved. And his testimony is all around the world today. All from one life. Guys, there's no insignificant life with God. There's no insignificant place. Follow his dream in your life. And don't worry about what other people think. Conventional wisdom says go to larger cities where people are. God's wisdom says he went from major city to towns and villages. I want to spend a minute here. Did you bring your Bible? How much time we have there, Carrie? We're getting close? Look at Mark chapter 1, if you would. I'm getting old. I have to use my glasses. By the way, when I got hit by that car, these glasses went flying. Man, I saw that white light. What's that? No, man, I'm taking advantage of that. I want you to feel bad. No, you couldn't have done anything about it. Mark chapter 1, of all places. Jesus starting out. Let's see, I have to find this. Matthew, Mark, chapter 1. Look at verse 21. I want to just show you progression. I'm not going to preach this to you. They went to Capernaum. That's where Jesus started. Capernaum is a major town around the Sea of Galilee. Okay? This is where the action was. They had a synagogue. It was really cool. And then if you look, verse 35, very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, Jesus, everybody's looking for you. Like they expected him to jump at everybody, okay? Hey, God, everybody's looking for you. Now, given humanity, we would have jumped at that. What, couldn't you imagine being a preacher out there and your disciples came to you and said, Pastor, Pastor, they're all looking for you. Oh, well, of course they're looking for me. You know, well, I expect them to look for me. That's the attitude that prevails in our society. But Jesus is a little opposite to that. He said, well, basically it's implied these words, if he's looking, if they're looking for us, then let's go somewhere else. Now, that's a real church growth strategy right there. You take that to your professor, J.D., put that, you'll get an A or a B or something there. All right, to the nearby villages, put that on a prospectus. See how much money you get. All right, so to a nearby village, those of you in church planning, you know what that is. So he went to a nearby village. So here we go from a Capernaum, which is a really cool city where all the people are, the action at, all the money is. He goes down there to nearby villages so he can preach there. Look at what he says. Five words, six words. That is why I have come. Brethren, underline that puppy. When Jesus says, that is why I've come, what does he mean? That is why I've come. I'll stop there. You don't have time. All right, someday, let me preach this, okay? But look, it doesn't stop there. Watch this. This is where you really need to get. Come down with the man of leprosy. And he healed the man of leprosy, and guy talked freely. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in the lonely places. Some of the places will say remote. Deserted is another translation. He went out, what is it? Unpopulated, okay, rural, remote. He said, yet the people still came to him from everywhere. Brethren, this is the promise to the rural or remote, which we'll talk about later, church planter, that you go, Jesus will show up wherever it is. Jesus is not afraid to show up in the deserted places. People will say, God is not there. Don't you believe it? If he's leading you there, he will have a way for you to make it happen, for him to make it happen through you. See, it doesn't always make sense. We try to make all this stuff make sense. And in the process, we're not making too much sense. We're making dollars. We're making names. We're writing books. But lostness is still going way, way above where we are in reaching the lost. Remember the 371? Baptisms as opposed to 162 million people. And that's growing by 3 million a year. The gap is growing. Will your generation make the difference? Mine has only got you here. But will yours make the difference? Will you learn from what we have learned and what we're trying to pass down? I hope it happens. Discussion about that? Go to your parents who paid for your education and who paid maybe for seminary, and go to them and say, well, I think I'm going to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. And, I'm not working on oil and making all that money. I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do, but God's called me there to reach those oil workers. Now, brethren, if we started you guys in junior high and high school, and we started telling you to really do a work from God, get a secular education, where you could then have a profession to go where no man can go. You see, some of you are locked in. I went to Bible college, then I went to seminary. All I know is how to lay brick and carpet and heavy stuff. Look at this body. Can I do that anymore? No. But some of you guys, you have opportunity. You have a profession. Don't give that up. Use it to the glory of God. Some of the reason you might not use it is because you have this pastor view. Take a lostness view. Man, I tell you what, I want to go where no one has gone before, or help other people go where no one has gone before. Let's continue. The city, you have more people but less impact. How many of you have been raised in the city? Okay. How many people you think you know in that city, dear? You in the pink back there. In your city, how many people that you know that... What's your name? Angel. Oh, I should have known that. Okay. Angel. How many people that you could walk in that city and go, oh, hey, yo, how are you, Angel? No, but how many? Take a guess. 50, 100, 150? I don't know. Nobody can say you're wrong, so just say a number. Nobody knows.
I know 100. My high school is
huge. Do they all know you?
No, not in it.
But could they say hi to you?
Yes, hundreds.
Hundreds. Okay. Wow, that's really cool. Who else is from the city? Somebody else raise their hand. City. How many people you know?
Maybe
40. 40, 30, 40. Yeah. Okay. And if we say real intimately, it may be less. You definitely less. You may have just 40 intimate ones. Usually you have like maybe 2, 3, 5 intimate ones.
But it really depends upon the personality.
Oh, of course. As do your personality. And that plays everywhere, brother. That plays everywhere. Okay? But most people want to go to a big city. Listen to this very, 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 very carefully. There is a lot of room for failure in a big city. You know what happens in major suburban areas? The people of churches get mad at one church. They just go to another. They go to another. We call it church hopping. Okay? They just go to another. And we'll start another one from the go 5 years later. We're not making a lost impact on lostness, but we're having other options for the people. When you go to a city, there's thousands and millions of people. So if you get five people who aren't following or mad or not discipled, the idea is, oh, there's five more. But when you go to a rural or a small town, you get to know more people. The town pastor has more influence. You'll get to know the policeman. You'll know the city officials. You'll be able to ride with that policeman. And you may not just ride with a policeman. I've done that in cities. You may be ride with the only Barney Fife in the whole town. And some of these towns don't even have police. They don't. They call a constable or somebody from another major area. You'll know the community. You'll be able to go to that mom-and-pop shop and know before long everybody in there because they'll be looking at you. You know you're a stranger. When you walk in, they all look at you. Like, who's this dude? Then you know, I got him. Now I just have to introduce myself because they're all looking. And you just make that happen. See, in small town, you can make less mistakes. So you have to really walk with God, but you have opportunity to have more influence. Now, brethren, if we start thinking about that influence, what one life, you can influence more people in that small town than you ever could in a big city. But for some reason, we got ourselves thinking in different ways. You understand that? Do we need to stop here? Does it make sense? How many of you it makes sense to? Okay. Does it make dollars, however? Okay. We have this conflict. I know the conflict is there. That's why we need to work from junior high telling people, get a profession if you're thinking church planting. In the eyes of God, there are no small churches, nor are there big pastors. Your bigness to God depends on your faithfulness and His sovereignty, not the place where you're set. We saw that in Paul. We saw it in Jesus Himself. Nowhere more than in America are Christians caught up in the 20th century syndrome of size. Size will show success. If I am consecrated, there will necessarily be large quantities of people, vows, etc. This is not so. Not only does God not say that size and spiritual power go together, but He even reverses this, especially in the teaching of Jesus. Tells us to be deliberately careful not to choose a big place, a place that's too big for us. I'm sorry. We all tend to emphasize big works and big places, but all such emphasis is of the flesh. To think in such terms is simply to hearken back to the old, unconverted, egotistic, self-centered me. Francis Schaeffer, who spent his entire, well, not his life, his last part of life, in a little small town, I think it's Luzerne, Switzerland. But he's impacted a Christian culture with words such as this. Doesn't matter where God sends you. Principle 3, the glory of God principle. Real simple. God calls me to seek His glory, not mine. Do you want to be a star or you want to be a servant? Two warnings. Jesus says, "Woe unto you when all men speak well of you, for that is how their fathers treated the false prophets." Now, why do I put that in there? Why did Jesus say all that? He was trying to tell disciples, you can't just give people what they want. And in order you to have people just loving you and all this, sometimes you have to sacrifice some truth. Some of these pastors, if you have time, I know you guys are young, but if you sit down, you'll hear them say things as, I don't want to offend anybody from the pulpit. They'll say things like, I want to keep all things positive. And J.D., you may have these guys come in, so maybe they'll have some questions like this. But I need to think all things positive. I had a pastor one time tell me, and he said he was preaching the Ten Commandments, and he was preaching them in a positive way. And he said, how you like that? How you like that? You know, he was like puffed up about it. I said, well, I don't really quite understand it. I said, if God wanted to do that, I think He would have written it in the book in a positive way. I just played dumb. But aren't those some of the questions we should be asking? You don't think God knew how to be positive? He warns us. We need to be careful what we're buying into because we're not making an impact on culture. That's my word. Oh, the other one, you saw the other warning. Okay? Do I need to go back there? Jesus said, I brought you glory on earth by doing the work you gave me to do. Will we be able to say this? This was in His high priestly prayer, 17. Do you remember the first few verses? What Jesus said, basically, He said, God, I've done what you asked me to do. I'm walking the way of the cross. Now get me out of here. He says, return me to the glory that I once had. He said, I spent all the time here. I've done it. And that's why at the end of your life, you should be spent. You should be spent. Jesus was spent. He was ready to go back. That's why God calls heaven rest. That's the promise. We don't set ourselves up in this resting institution called the church. We spend ourselves in the power of God so that when we're ready to go home to meet Him, we're ready. Paul was ready. He said, well, I'd like to go, but maybe there's some more things I have to do around here. Very important stuff. We look at numbers. God looks at faithfulness to Him through obedience, service to God and others, love for God, genuine faith, vital prayer life, practice of holiness, positive attitude. I know we should spend more time here, but for the purpose of time, you guys dwell on this. We'll give you the answers. Break. How's that sound? Huh? Any questions on this portion? You see how we got here? Listen carefully. Do you see how rural might be neglected? Small may be neglected. Think. Be honest with yourself when you leave here. All I want you to do is be honest with what your thinking process is. And if you can be honest with that, you can open the door for God to say, you know, I may have another thing for you here. While you're young and you have energy and the kids can go through anything. Or you're old and you're retired and you have money. Or you're a professional, you were trained as an engineer or a marketing or whatever, you can do this. Think through some of those issues. All right, any questions? All right, 10, what are we taking? 15 after, we'll start back right at 15 after. Thank you, guys.